Daniel Jackson, professor of computer science at MIT.
You probably know that ADM, Accenture's software development process, is based on the V model. What exactly is the V model, and how does it help? Well, it's called the V model because of a common diagram that shows the progression of activities from requirements through to acceptance testing, not as a straight line, but like the letter V, going down from requirements at 45 degrees, then bending bang up again at coding, until it reaches acceptance testing at the top. What's the significance of this diagram? It's that activities at the same level are related. Horizontal arrows are usually drawn connecting activities on one side of the V with corresponding activities on the other. So requirements is connected to acceptance testing, architectural design to system testing, module design to unit testing, and so on. Exactly which activities are included, whether there's an architectural design step, for example, distinct from a system design step, or whether requirements is broken into business planning and application analysis, as it is at Accenture, isn't the critical thing. What matters is these relationships across the V. The point is that the activity on the left end of each arrow is validated by the activity on the right end. So acceptance testing validates requirements, systems testing validates system design, and so on. From one point of view, the V model is an admission of failure. An ideal process would only have you making decisions you could check soon after making them. That way, you don't get deeper and deeper into a potential disaster and find that you have to back out of a decision you made long ago after making 1,000 further decisions. It's why an approach to software design that used to be popular, called top-down design, was actually a terrible idea. Here's how it worked, or supposedly worked. You took a clean sheet of paper, drew a box, and labeled it the system. Then you broke this box into some smaller boxes and gave them names like read input, process data, write output. You carried on doing this until eventually you had boxes representing functions that were small enough they could be implemented as modules. This seemed like a good idea, but it never worked in practice. The problem was that, as Michael Jackson explains in his book System Development, the very first decomposition, breaking the system into read input, process data, write output, and so on, was based on almost no knowledge of what was to come. And when you wrote a label like process data, you weren't even clear what that meant, since it wasn't until later that you figured out exactly what data was to be processed. So what happened in practice was that you'd get to the end, hand off specifications of the modules to programmers, and then they'd find that the functions they had to build weren't coherent and had messy interfaces. The modules wouldn't fit together, and you'd have to patch up the tree with all kinds of structure-violating communications, such as function calls across levels and reading and writing of global variables. Invariably, to fix the problems, you'd have to start all over again. One way to view progress in software development is that it's all been about avoiding the problems of this V. It's well known that the cost of fixing a mistake made in requirements rises by about a factor of 10 for every phase in which you fail to catch it. So, for example, if it would cost you $10 to fix a requirements problem while you're still doing requirements analysis, it would cost $100 if you've already done architectural design, $1,000 if you're into module design, $10,000 if you've already coded, and so on, with the final factor of 10 being the difference between finding the problem in acceptance testing versus finding it in the field after the system has already been deployed. It makes sense, therefore, to do everything you can to avoid making mistakes that aren't found until much later. There are two ways to do this. One is just not to make risky decisions that you can't ratify early on. This is the strategy of agile approaches, which encourage you to get a version of the system working before you decide on the details of the functionality. Another is to check each decision as you go along. That's why Accenture has its exit criteria for each of the development phases. In the early phases, these are mostly manual reviews. Researchers have been working on finding more automated checks. There's an approach called formal methods, in which the requirements and design are written down in a precise way, in a modeling language, with a clear and unambiguous meaning, and various simulations and checks are then applied using powerful algorithmic tools. My own Alloy language works this way. These approaches have the great advantage that they leverage the power of the computer to do the checking. An Alloy analysis, for example, often covers a billion cases or more, far more than could ever be done by conventional testing. But despite our best efforts, mistakes are inevitable, and some will escape detection, only to be found much later. Does this mean that the horizontal arrows of the V model are just an admission of defeat? In a sense, yes, but they also have a positive implication. A crucial aspect of the V model is that when you do each of the early phases, even if you can't actually perform its validation then and there, you can define what that validation will be. So when you write the requirements, you also write the acceptance tests. This is incredibly valuable for two reasons. First, it adds clarity to the decisions you're making. A test case is a concrete scenario, an example of how the system is expected to behave in a particular situation. Writing test cases is a great way to check that you really understand the details of what you're specifying. And concrete scenarios are very helpful for clients, as they're usually easier to grasp than general formulations. This is why use cases, which are after all just test cases for system behavior, are so popular. There's another reason it's useful to think about how you'll validate a decision at the time you make it. You might find that you can't formulate a test condition at all, that the property you've specified isn't actually testable. Suppose we've specified that our system will have a high availability with a maximum downtime of 1 hour a year. How are we going to test that? First of all, we'll realize that we'd better be more precise. Do we mean that an average user will see only an hour of downtime? Or that it's acceptable for there to be a black hour in which all users are down? And what does down mean? That performance is degraded? That some data is inaccessible? Secondly, and this is where things get even harder, we have to figure out, once we've specified our property more clearly, how we're actually going to test it. Suppose for simplicity we were building a single user system running on a single machine. Do we have to wait a year and measure the downtime? And what if we do run it for a year and get the required availability? Will that give us enough confidence? Maybe we should run it for 10 years and take an average. Or can we divide the hour by 12 and see if the downtime after running for a month is 5 minutes or less? And what kind of load will we use in our tests? These are hard questions, and it's good that the V model makes us ask them. They are an example of beneficent difficulties, something I'll be talking about in a later podcast. Here's a final thought I'll leave you with. Those horizontal arrows, as I've explained, are a liability, and the longer they are, the more they can cost you. So one thing we can do to reduce risk is to make the arrows shorter. Instead of one big V, we can make our project a series of little Vs. This is essentially what agile approaches do, although they tend to emphasize the implementation and testing phases more than the specification and design phases. And they explicitly include refactoring as a key activity.
Copyright 2009, Daniel Jackson. Introductory music, copyright Chris Bremer, from pianosociety.com.